Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, I'll be joined by Eric Fawcett, GetterCountry.com. We're going to break down Florida's new players. Sam Alexis, the UT Chattanooga forward, has transferred to the Gators and been introduced as the newest member of the Gators. Alex Lloyd, a top 50 recruit from Westminster Academy down in Fort Lauderdale. Tremendous program run by the great Aaron Walloff, has committed to the Gators as well. Alex is a special player. He's risen 70 spots in the recruiting rankings over the past year. Plays for a great AAU team, Knight Riders Elite. Was really fantastic at the Peach Jam. You're going to learn more about him and the Gators' newest commitment, first top 50 recruit, Todd Goldenera, on this show. So, as always, remember to give us a ranking on Spotify. Hit that heart button. Give us a rating on Apple. Any of those things help us get sponsorships. Keep this show going for you guys. We appreciate you. Subscribe to our Patreon too, patreon.com/FloridaBPHour. Any of that stuff helps us keep going. Hope you guys enjoy the show. Hey, me again. Guys, when you listen to this, you're going to realize that we stopped recording probably 5 minutes before Ruben Chinyelu committed to Florida. So Ruben Chinyelu has signed with the Gators. Obviously, a production standpoint, a Micah Hanlockton type of production replacement who offers probably a little more as a shot blocker in terms of his defensive upside. But young player, lots of eligibility left, consistent with the kind of portal evaluations and takes that Todd Golden and his staff have had. So Florida adds to its front court with Ruben Chinyelu, who we also discuss on this show. Thanks. Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, I will be joined by Eric Fawcett, GetterCountry.com. We're going to talk about Florida's new commitments. Sam Alexis, who will join the Gators next season from UT Chattanooga. Big man has committed. And then Todd Golden lands his highest rated recruit yet in Alex Lloyd from Westminster Academy, top 50 player in the 2026 class. So, Lloyd, not a reclassification guy, but will be with the Gators in a year. Going to play his senior season down at Westminster in Fort Lauderdale, where they have won a couple state championships. They did not this year. They were the number one seed, got beat. But I think that's a very exciting commitment, which we will talk about on this show. I think one of the big reasons that it's exciting isn't just that Florida picks up a top 50 commitment for the first time in the golden era, but also really that it creates inroads to some other recruitments that Florida cares about. And it also continues to emphasize Florida's kind of footprint as it relates to, capturing and convincing players from the state of Florida to stay home, which I think is arguably the bigger impact of that moving forward. But we'll get into all that. We also have Jumpman matchups confirmed, which I think, because it's the third Jumpman and there's only four teams, like it was kind of like pretty obvious what they were going to do. But I still want to talk about that with Eric. In fact, I might even just start the show there and disappoint everybody because I'm kind of jazzed about the idea. Florida hasn't played UNC since Atlantis. I think that was 2015. I'm pretty convinced. I wouldn't have tweeted this if I wasn't convinced it was true. Like, I'm pretty convinced it'll be RJ Davis and Walter Clinton Jr., which is like going to be two of the best shooting guards in the country. That will be a lot of fun.
I mean, let's not forget the secret scrimmage that was never confirmed from the Florida side that was ever happening until North Carolina posted a 5-minute highlight reel on Twitter in Florida's gym. So that's a shout out to Brent Meckler. If he's listening, he'll love that one. But let's not forget that secret scrimmage as well, where the Gators played well, and then people thought that meant the Gators were going to have a really good season. And then we found out that both North Carolina and Florida were not very good. But obviously I'm joking. I did think it was kind of funny just what you're talking about. Like, there's only, I think it's 9 Jumpman teams now with the Jordan brand. And so there's obviously not that many possible opponents. So like, there's a couple people on the Gator Country forums, and I shouldn't laugh at this. I'm so happy when anyone engages in basketball, even if they don't follow closely, but there's a lot of people that are like, wow, what an honor to be like included at this event. And like, what an honor to play a blue blood like North Carolina. And it's kind of like, well, like, there's only so many options here. So it is really great. I think we talk about it every year, so we don't need to again, but it's obviously such a massive advantage to the Gators from a recruiting standpoint to be a Jordan brand school. Actually, in terms of opponents, I think it'd be really cool if Howard was included, the one kind of I believe they're the one mid-major school that's on that's a Jordan brand school. So I think it'd be cool if they got Howard involved. But other than that, it's, you know, the matchups can be pretty. You can kind of know what they're, you know, we can almost guess the next couple of years and we wouldn't hit everyone, but, you know, we hit a couple. So, it's definitely just, it's nice for the Gators to just know they have a really good neutral site game every single year. It's some of these teams are going to be down a little bit at times, but still it's like you play them on a neutral site. It's going to be good. So, it's kind of been a nice, like, predictable part of the offseason now to say like, oh, I wonder who the Gators are going to get in the Jumpman. It's probably going to be one of these two teams that's going to be good. And it's something that instantly, you can be excited for. It's North Carolina. It's a big brand. I think it's become a nice routine part of the off season.
Yeah, no, I was just stoked. Like, I think it's, and I mean, North Carolina's a team that even more so than Florida. Well, I wouldn't say more so. They're a similar turnover to Florida. But unlike Florida, like, they have to replace an All-American, even if RJ Davis comes back, which I think is happening at this point. Of course, he could turn pro like before I even post this podcast to all the streams, and I'd be stunned, but I guess that could still happen. Replacing Armando Bacot's going to be a big deal. They also lose Cormac Ryan. Seth Trimble is transferring, which is a guy that Florida contacted. If Florida's kind of backup options search in the portal for something resembling a point guard continues, I'm sure we will talk about that on this show. Florida did take a step towards addressing their front court by adding Sam Alexis of UT Chattanooga. Florida has had success with transfers who are from the state of Florida that come home. And really all the way back to Canyon Berry, that's the case. But, you know, doing it again here with Sam Alexis, who's from Apopka and the self-proclaimed UCF Knights, lifelong UCF Knights fan, is headed to Gainesville to play for the Gators. He strikes me as a guy who, if they want to replace Hanlockton's production, like, it's kind of interesting that they've gotten a player who I think is a huge defensive upgrade, but does a lot of the things that Micah can do on the glass, even though he's only 6'9".
Yeah. Like, I would see him as more of a Tyree Samuel replacement, like, yeah, just given what they've did all last, like, how they built the roster last year. And yeah, again, I think he could play the five, and to be honest, I would like him to play the five in some scenarios. I just don't know if that's going to happen necessarily. And I do think it's a nice kind of philosophical switch where, I don't think Alexis is a great offensive player, to be honest with you. And what he does well is kind of post up and overpower SoCon opponents. And he's got really nice touch and can score with either hand. I did some, you know, we looked at it on a Patreon video, so you can see a little bit of what I'm talking about. So I'm not saying he's like he's better than Micah Hanlockton offensively, for sure, if we're still, you know, jumping between who we're comparing him to. I wouldn't say he's like, if you look at like Tyree Samuel, his strength was on the offensive end. If you look at Mike Hanlockton, his strength was offensive rebounding and was not really on either side of the ball, but it was with with Alexis, it's like you're giving up a little bit offensively. I don't think he's going to be a plus player at the position. He could be a decent offensive player at the position, like an average, but I do think he's an above average a defensive player. So I think that that just shows a big philosophical switch from last year when the Gators just went pretty much offense, offense, offense at every position. I think they probably thought they were getting defense from Micah Hadlockton. I don't know what I get he had a good block rate. Every advanced stat other than that, all the film showed that was not going to be the case, and we saw what happened. So I really feel as though the Gators just went offense, 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 offense with the portal. And what did we get from the season? A Florida team that put up a ton of points and struggled on the defensive end. So with Alexis, yeah, you're not getting the flashiest, sexiest offensive player. But I really like what he does defensively. Like, the film is just delightful to watch. For him to have as big a frame as he does, to be as long as he is, and move as well as he does, I just was loving everything I was seeing on that side of things. So I'm going to presume he's a power forward for the Gators. And it's just one of those things where, like, I think as a player, Tyree Samuel was if you had to give him a letter grade, like, as a player, he's like a B defender. I don't think he's a great defender, but I think he's a solid defender. But if you play him a power forward full time, he suddenly becomes like a C or a C minus. So, I just don't feel like he was put in a good position to defend. And therefore, he played somewhat of a role in a Florida team that struggled to defend overall. But you put Alexis in that position, I think he's like an A defender at the power forward spot. You could also play him at center if needed. And I think he'll give up a little bit of bulk. Like, I know he's listed at 230 pounds. I'm not sure if I totally believe that, but he's not skinny. But I think there's some matchups you'd be concerned with a little bit from a bulk standpoint at center, but I certainly think he could play some minutes there. But you like him so much more at the four, where he's going to be able to guard some of the like 6'7" more athletic fours in the SEC. And he can totally switch out onto guards and that'll be totally fine. That just wasn't the case last year. So I would say, like, if you looked at it, and you can correct me if you think differently, but I think that all the portal additions last year were offense first. I'm going to call this a defense first addition for the Gators. And of course, with, he's just finished his sophomore season. So I'm not saying he can't get better offensively. He certainly can. I know there was some talk about belief in his jump shot. That's kind of where I'm like, okay, we'll see. I don't personally see that at this moment, but hey, anyone can improve there. I'm curious to see what happens. Like, is this their one defensive ace that they're going to put in the lineup? And again, if you had, I do think if you had the same, let's imagine a world where it was the same starting lineup last year, except you had Sam Alexis in for Tyree Samuel. I think the Gators are, they take a significant hit on the offensive side of things and maybe are like the 25th best offensive team. But I think that they are like suddenly the 45th or 50th best defensive team. I really think he could have a massive impact when you can have someone that fits a lot better at that position. So yeah, I'm interested to see what the signals, like, is this the one defensive stopper? And then they keep going after a lot of offensive guys. Cause I really do think just by having a much, much improved option there in the front court defensively could really help a lot of things. Or is this like a bigger shift, because we know that Todd Golden, for his up until this year, his teams have always been defense first. So is this like a movement back to what Golden is most comfortable with and saying, like, hey, I think we need to get back to being a defensive club if we're going to reach what we need to. So, I guess we'll see with the next big commitment, I guess, but that's kind of a lot of my thoughts on the first one.
I love it. I definitely see him as a defensive upgrade. I don't really see him as like the Samuel replacement. I see him more as the Condon replacement. And I guess maybe I think we're talking over each other a little bit on that. Like, it's really just like, that's just what I see in terms of like a production replacement, right? Like, they probably assume that Alex Condon takes a leap. And so they think that Alexis can get 6 rebounds a game and block 1.5 shots a game. And I think that's probably a pretty safe bet. If they're trying to replicate that production. Meanwhile, they get a guy who was top 100 in defensive rebounding, top 50 in offensive rebounding, top 40 in block rate, and did it like did well in the handful of times that he faced really quality opposition. You know, I think a lot, I've seen a lot of Gator fans on message boards already talking about how he had 13 points and 6 rebounds and 3 blocks against Auburn. And, you know, I guess there were some stare downs and trash talking with Johnny Broome, but I mean, who isn't a big man that hasn't trash talked back and forth with Johnny Broome. But I get the point. Like he was productive in that game as a very young player. So I think, you know, and Chattanooga was a good team. They weren't a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. They weren't a great team, certainly, but you know, I think when you go 21-12 and you know, turn down a CBI invite, you're probably, that's a pretty good season for a school of that caliber. And they were finished in the top portion of their league. And there's not like the red flag, like the Amari Williams red flag that has recently been discussed, even though he's got all these high profile visits where he's like 21 minutes a game in the Coastal because he's in foul trouble a lot. Right. Sam Alexis, you know, playing 25 minutes a game in a league that is certainly comparable, if not better than the Coastal. So not saying he's better than Amari Williams. Certainly Amari is a terrific player in terms of his ability to score and do other things and play great defense. You know, maybe a more complete player, but certainly not minutes limitations due to constantly being in foul trouble on the Alexis end. So I think Florida fans are disappointed that Amari Williams didn't visit. Just understand that I think Florida's staff had some concerns, whether or not, you know, you factor into that what you will. But I think they're pretty pleased with the Sam Alexis take. I'm not saying that it was either or on Amari Williams either. I don't think that's the case. But it will be fascinating, as Eric mentioned, now that Williams isn't visiting, to see, like, where Florida goes next in their front court. You know, a couple of their pieces have been taken off the board, not just Williams. I know they had Omar Ballo, who didn't look great against PJ Hall, but looked good in a lot of other games, from Arizona, scheduled to visit. That's not going to happen now. Ruben Chinyelu was just at Florida, and there's some whispers that could lead to a commitment, but I haven't heard anything definitive that would even send me to the Sleep Well tweet. So, you know, maybe some kind of thoughts on Ruben, who, again, I think would be another guy that would up Florida's defensive quotient. And maybe that would be sort of your hand-locked-in replacement, assuming that everything I'm hearing from inside the program is correct and Micah won't play for the Gators in a game until probably late December. At least it looks like right now.
Yeah, I'm still in awe of modern medicine, where I think that like there was pictures of him at the spring game tailgate where he like didn't have like a big cast on or anything.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's like, my goodness. So I don't know. It's again, that's something that I'm not personally looking to try to report on. I'm just gonna be happy to see when we hear the timeline to recovery, and like, doesn't need to be said, but like, no one wants him to rush with something like this. So it'll be just an amazing story when he does get back on the court. Like, can you imagine what the Odom's gonna sound like when he's able to come back, especially if it ends up being what could be something like 18 months, just because of the unfortunate time that it happened, both because it was leading into the NCAA tournament and also because it seems like it eliminated a whole season. Yeah, so that's going to be an amazing story when it happens. But yeah, I would see Chinyelu as much more of that kind of replacement. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to say I don't see it with Chinyelu, but like, I don't see it. But I also, like, yes, I get it. He's 6'11" with like a 7'8" wingspan, so I like see it. But like, this is a guy that like really, really struggled to get on the floor for Washington State. Who of course was a tournament team, but you know, it's like, okay, he playing against Pac-12 teams, he was at like 12 minutes a game playing off the bench, playing soft minutes against bench units. And yeah, it's just like, just does not have any offensive feel or touch. And I know I've said that, which, yeah, I mentioned about Micah Hamilton that I didn't think he had a lot of offensive touch coming into Florida. Like I think that Micah Hamilton had more offensive instincts than Ruben Chinyelu. Yeah, there's like a kind of like, there's an idea that Ruben Chinyelu is like super athletic, because I think that people see a 6'11" long center and they're like, wow, he's so athletic. I don't think he's a very good athlete. And I know that's going to sound crazy, and some people are going to see some of his highlights and be like, what are you talking about? But like, he has a lot of like he hardly leaves the floor oftentimes to like block shots and dunk. And it's like, which again, it's like, he also doesn't have to, and he blocks everything with like, again, this like comical 7'8" wingspan. Like his like hands look like they hang by like under his knees. But yeah, I just think like mobility wise, I don't think he's a very good athlete. I think he's like just slow to react and slow to get in the air. And sometimes with his length, he's just able to, still get to shots, still get to passes that are lobbed to him and finish. But again, I just like, this was like, if this is a guy who was at like 12 minutes a game in the Pac-12, like there's a chance he has a big explosion and maybe that's what the Gators are looking at. But if this is like a pencil in as your starter guy, I think that's trouble personally. So if the Gators took him, I would be like, hey, here's a guy that has absurd length, this huge frame and has shown the ability to, you know, block a lot of shots and dominate the glass while still needing a lot of work to be done on his mobility and everything like that. And like, yeah, obviously if you figure it out with him, like that's someone who could be super dominant. And maybe that's also a guy that hangs around the program for multiple years. If he doesn't, you know, prove himself to be a capable pro. But I would just see that one as something into the flyer mold of things. And I would be a little bit concerned if it was like a take where it was like, okay, well now this, you know, this is our starter. And I feel like if Florida already has Alex Condon and Thomas Houck and Sam Alexis, and if they take Chinyelu, like maybe they do take another portal big, but I don't know if they do. So yeah, it's not one that excites me greatly, unless the Gators also got someone that I would feel a lot better at as a starter. And then you get Chinyelu, and then I'm like, hey, that's you know, bring in a physical freak like that off the bench, who's got some upside because of the frame. Like, yeah, we'll see what happens. But it's just really hard for, like, the film is really, really bad. This is also a guy that, like, coming out of high school was, and this is with all due respect to Washington State, obviously, that Kyle Smith has done a tremendous job, and he has out evaluated a lot of teams on a lot of players. But like, this was a guy that, you know, Florida was recruiting and a lot of other big time programs were recruiting, and he ended up at Washington State out of high school. So was that because he chose Washington State over a bunch of blue bloods and big programs, or was it because a lot of teams cooled on him? I've got my guess based on the film, but yeah, so I don't know. Yeah. Like I do think you framed it correctly, that it would be a Micah Hanlockton kind of take. We saw Hanlockton was able to play starters minutes capably, but not exceptionally. I see the floor is a lot lower for Chinyelu, but I guess I could see the ceiling being higher.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of valuable stuff that you said there. I think one of the things that with Chinyelu that I think is interesting is this isn't a guy. He's played basketball a little longer than Alex Condon, right? Like, he's still another guy who came from an NBA academy, came to basketball a little bit later, but not as late as Condon did. He wasn't particularly sensational, though, in, you know, any other sport. It wasn't like, I think, you know, and if you look at some of the like stories that were written about him when he was playing on a really good team in the Basketball Africa League, like they all kind of zeroed in on his length and like his potential athleticism, but you didn't really see a ton of that as a freshman. You did see a guy who I thought is smart, seems to be like an intelligent player who has good technique as a rebounder, did well, like with his box outs on the defensive glass, I thought did a nice job, had some big time rebound games, but also struggled to get on the floor because he's just so limited offensively that Kyle Smith really couldn't play him in a lot of high leverage spots, if any at all, because he's not a great passer. He doesn't have too many post moves. I mean, his way of scoring is to get putbacks and to use like the one skill that he does have that's very good, which is his ability to rebound. I do think that he is an intelligent player in terms of his, defensive positioning. And if you look at some of his blocks, he tends to be in good position from some of the film that I watched. And I think that's consistent with a guy who was an academic All-American at Washington State. Like, it's clear that he is a guy with a big brain, right? It's not as clear to me that he is some sort of elite prospect who came out of an NBA academy and was some diamond in the rough that they found in Africa. Like, I think a lot of that is cringy trope stuff anyway. And he's not really that, Eric. So I do think if Florida was looking for a guy who can play 15 minutes and get 5 rebounds, that's fine. If Florida is adding him as somebody who can start next to Alex Condon, I would agree with your position that to me would be problematic.
Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see who else ends up on the board. Like, again, centers are so hard to find in the portal. That's just one of the tough positions for sure. It's why Tyree Samuel did well to go in the portal late, and he commanded a big NIL check because of it, because there's not a lot out there. And I'll be interested to see what happens there. But that's also the thing that does need to be stated, as much as, you know, I might be like, well, a take like that wouldn't excite me greatly, though it would intrigue me slightly. It's like, also like, well, like, you've got to not really play the hand you're dealt. That wouldn't be the completely correct. But you got to play the board. Like, there's only, you know, there's only so many centers out there. And, that is also why I feel like, recruiting out of high school, like, if you can get some of those guys in the pipeline, it's just, and that's why it's so nice that the Gators do have two young front court players that have shown some upside. This just happens every year. And, you know, Umar Ballo, he's okay. Like, I think he's good, or I should say he's good. I mean, he commanded a absolutely monster NIL check, and teams are just lining up to grab him at all costs. And it's just one of those things that, like, if that's the guy that, like, might be the highest paid player in NIL this year, that through the portal, like, that just says something about the center market, that there's just so few out there. That's also why I think Sam Alexis is such a massive pickup. And there is actually, like, a world to me, and I don't know if this would be Florida's optimal situation, but yeah, there's also a world to me where, like, the Gators don't get, let me frame it this way. There's a situation where, like, if situation A is the Gators get Ruben Chinyelu, and that's the one that, like, might have to start, or the other option is Sam Alexis is more of a five, and the Gators get a really good power forward because there's more 6'7", 6'8" power forwards in the portal than there are centers. Like, I really do think there's a scenario where it's like, oh, maybe Alex Condon and Sam Alexis are the two guys that split 40 minutes at five, and the Gators get someone who's probably going to have some kind of wart. Like, they're going to be undersized, but they're going to be a really good, really good player at the four. And I think there's honestly something to be maybe said about just getting the better players and figuring it out. Could Alexis be ultimately be a five? Like, again, I don't think so. I think the Gators are still would love a true five, a bigger player than that. But if it, like, so happens that they pivot or it ends up that Alexis is a five, I think the Gators would be okay in a lot of situations, just, of course, assuming that then they would get a better power forward. But that's going to be really interesting, and I'm fascinated to know exactly how the Gators see Chinyelu. As it's like, would it be like a little nerve-wracking for them taking him, thinking he was going to have to be a major contributor? Or is it like, oh, we think this guy could play 12 minutes off the bench next year, and the year after that, maybe he pops and is dominant. That's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, no, definitely will be Florida's front court. I think that kind of sums up where the visits are, at least that have happened and that were supposed to happen. Because we talked Williams, we talked Bello, we talked, yeah, Chinyelu and Alexis, who committed.
JP Pegues.
Yeah, JP. We're just front court.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, shifting to backcourt. Yeah, I mean, that's the one that the Patreon questions I'm getting, like the messages I get on the Patreon right now, or that Eric and I get on the Patreon, are all about, like, what's Florida going to do at point guard? I saw a few about Aiden Mahoney from St. Mary, and everybody and their mother is going to reach out to him. I saw a tweet from Aaron Torres who said, like, 150 schools reached out to him, including Duke, UConn, North Carolina, and Kentucky. I saw another article on Sea of Blue that said, like, Kentucky and UConn lead, which I thought was hilarious because he's been in the portal for 24 hours. I saw another one on the shell of a publication that used to be Sports Illustrated, where they said that UConn, Kentucky, Florida, and Duke were favored, and I guess Florida because of Todd Golden's connection to St. Mary's. Look, I don't know. We'll see. Does Florida have a chance? I mean, I guess in the same way that everyone has a chance right now with that player. I think that that's possible. I think the more productive ones to talk about are JP Pegues, who could not get into Florida, so had to cancel his visit and commit elsewhere due to academic issues. And so that left Florida kind of thinking that they didn't have their point guard. Elijah Martin did visit. From my understanding, that visit went really well. Martin wants to handle the ball more than he was asked to by Dusty May. He's a guy that didn't have a sexy, like, assist to turnover ratio, but also had, like, a very low turnover rate for a guy who had decent usage and was kind of a guy that they used to attack the rim a lot and put himself in high stress situations with the ball where he could commit turnovers, did not do so. I think the big question with him is, like, could he handle being a primary ball handler for Florida? I say A, because I think if you take Elijah Martin, you're really asking Denzel Aberdeen to show that he's the player that he was in a couple games late in the season, because he's going to have to play quite a bit as your point guard, assuming you're keeping Walter Clayton as your shooting guard, which I think Florida wants to do. You know, Walt's not a point guard. We know that. We saw that. We said that on this podcast 7 months ago, got a lot of pushback for it. Got tweeted at by his family, I think. And we're right. Like, you know, not his whole family. I think one member was like, well, Walt's been playing point guard since he was 10. It's like, that's nice. Doesn't mean that he's a power six point guard. And he was not and will not be. So can Elijah Martin be a primary ball handling point guard in at least some of Florida's possessions? Maybe. I think the thing about Martin that I like so much is, you know, and this is with all due respect to Zion Pullen, who I thought defended better later in the year, but Elijah Martin competes defensively. Like, he can really guard you. He's who Dusty May put on everybody's best perimeter player. I think he's a really good defender. Like, I think it's a significant upgrade defensively. Now, production-wise, like for like with ZP in terms of passing, in terms of court vision, not similar. But he's also not been asked to do that. So it becomes a question of, like, is that something that is in his game that Dusty May just didn't use because they had a point guard? Like, I don't know. But he's a player I like a lot. I think he's very good. And I think he also is somebody who's a legitimate 6'5" and gives something
Are we sure about that? That is where I'm. I mean, I think he's listed at 6'2". And
Is he listed at 6'2"?
I don't know if he's.
Oh, then I might have missed.
I don't know. We might have to.
No, I'll look it up.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
no, that's okay.
I'll say my concerns while you. But
yeah, never mind.
Be,
so
that would be my thought. Is that
no? You're right. Six foot. You're right. So he's 6'2". Sorry. He's 6'2" and strong. Right. Like yes. So. He's strong, but doesn't have Pullen's height. Whereas Pullen was the legitimate 6'4". Right. And so that I think is another thing that's interesting. Like as good as he was defensively, he does give up something from a height standpoint. Thank you for pointing that out.
I didn't mean to undermine you there, but I do think that is just one of the concerns is that he is.
No, that's my mistake.
He is a 6'2", like he's a 6'2" player. That's not really a point guard. Well, I would say actually not a point guard. And again, like I made my arguments about like Walter Clayton, why I didn't think he was, you know, really a point guard, but you know, like, you know, he's whatever, comma, that's like really, if you did like a blind, I don't know, I know it's like hard to do this, but if you watched all his possessions blind or you looked at his analytical profile blind, you'd be like, yeah, this is like a small forward. But yeah, he's 6'2". And again, I'll also say too, just like for anyone who's like, oh, like he was also listed at 6 feet on the nose as a freshman and now is listed at 6'2", which tells me it's probably, you know, like it's, 6'1", I think he might be, you know, he's going to be closer to 6'1" than 6'4", 6'3". So, but it honestly, like, I don't even mean that to really undermine what you're saying, just in the sense that I do think he's a tremendous defender. And you did see in lineups where Florida Atlantic, like if the other team's best player was a 3, it was Elijah Martin. Like it didn't, like they still put him on like 6'7", bigger ball handlers. I just think, again, the concern with him is someone who is a bit of a streaky shooter from deep. That of course hurt them in the NCAA tournament this year, where he went 0-for-6 against Northwestern when they Florida Atlantic just desperately needed someone to make a shot. It's also why when they lost to Temple in the American tournament and got upset there, he was 0-for-4 from 3. He was also 0-for-5 from the field. So he had a little bit of a rough game there. But again, he still really brings on the defensive end. He also even rebounds at a really high level for a guard. So I really do see him as like just a bulldog guard. He like, this is not like this comparison is like a 6 out of 10. So don't take this as like exact, but to me, he's kind of like Kayvon Allen. Like again, Kayvon Allen, who was like certainly not a point guard.
Right.
Was undersized at the 2, still really, really defended, had that muscular frame, really streaky from 3. I just would say that I think Elijah Martin is a lot craftier than Kayvon Allen. I don't feel like Kayvon Allen had much wiggle. Like but Kayvon Allen was more powerful than Elijah Martin. Like he was more of an explosive leaper. So if you got him in a straight line, he'd meet guys at the rim and finish over them, where Elijah Martin has a lot more wiggle, a little more craft. But again, it's just a situation where I think if you take him, you're saying our backcourt's going to be Walter Clayton and Elijah Martin with 2 guys that handle it a little bit but aren't great. Are you concerned with that? 2 guys that are undersized. Again, I think Elijah Martin's really good defensively, handles himself really well against bigger players. Not really a concern to me, to be honest, but
yeah.
You know, maybe Florida gets hunted and switches a little more. I think it's just like the offensive fit is just going to be a little bit clunky. So it's another player too, that like, if he hit the portal after last season, where they have the Final Four run, it's like, I bet he's like suddenly recruited as like one of the best players in the portal. So I'm interested to see like what he would command, I guess, from an NIL standpoint. And if there's just better things you could do with your dollars, but like, he would be an absolute fan favorite with the way he defends and kind of his fearlessness. It's just one of those things that you wonder, like he took a ton of threes, which is awesome, but it's like, okay, if we dial that back a little bit, be a little bit more selective, can he be more of a, like a 40% 3-point shooter, like he was earlier in his career, than like a 34%, kind of you know, hot and cold guy like he was this year. So, it would still be a take that I would be, you know, like if it just like while this podcast is recording, news comes down that he commits to Florida, I would be happy with it for sure. But it would not be without some concern for sure.
Yeah, no, I think there's questions in terms. Again, it's just ball handling. Like if you look at, he wasn't even in their top 10 lineups in the last month of the season as like a primary ball handler. not just at the one, like just as the guy handling the ball the most. So this would be a pretty radical new ask of him. Now, in terms of defense, like, yeah, I mean, when I say it's an upgrade, that honestly, and I apologize to our listeners for getting the height wrong. I'm glad Eric jumped on me. Yeah, we make mistakes too at FBH. And I just wrote the wrong height down. So like, how about the fact that like when they beat Texas A&M, he had Tyrese Radford, and Radford had 2 points and five turnovers. Like, I mean, God, Florida fans would love to, I guess we don't have to deal with Boots anymore. I think he's out of his 26 years of eligibility, but you know, Florida fans would have loved to have anyone that could stop that guy. You know, when they played Arizona and won that game, they put him on Kylan. They put him on Kylan Boswell for a little. They put him on Pele Larson for a little. Those guys played terrible, and it was like the Caleb Love show that kept Arizona in that game. And that was Jalen Gaffney and Brian Greenlee and whoever they tried to put on Caleb Love that didn't work. And they didn't want to switch Martin on there, I think, because a big key, and Dusty may rightly realize it, like a big key on kind of slowing down Arizona was slowing down everything that isn't Caleb Love, right? So like if we can put Martin on their best complementary piece, that works. I think there's a lot of different ways you can deploy Elijah Martin defensively, and Florida didn't really have a weapon like that. So I would like this take, but I think the asterisk for me is it then requires Denzel Aberdeen to be who the staff seems to think he can be. Like, they need the jump from Denzel Aberdeen, because Walter Clayton's going to play. And I looked at it from like a minutes perspective. We saw Will Richard enter the NBA draft too yesterday. I would imagine Will will get the feedback and be back. Just like Clayton is anticipated to be back. So like, if you have Will Richard, you have, you know, 30 minutes to 25 to 30 minutes at the three there. You have 35 minutes that you can pencil in for Walt Clayton. So let's say Richard is closer to 25 than 30. It's like 27. Well, that's 62 minutes of 120. So you've got to find 58 other minutes for your point guard spot, which is 40, and then 18 other minutes at the three. Like, I don't know. Is Thomas Houck going to play some of those 18? Maybe. But really, those are Denzel Aberdeen and Elijah Martin's minutes, right? Like, and so that's, you need that jump from Denzel if you take Elijah Martin. I think that's fine to take Elijah Martin. I think he's, like you said, I think he'd be a fan favorite. He's a winner. And, you know, he would fit in with the scorned football recruits who weren't quite good enough to play in the SEC and bet on themselves in basketball club that Walter Clayton started last year. For those that don't know, Martin, like Clayton, was a quarterback recruit. And like Clayton, he got invited to like the Big State U camp in his state. So Clayton went to Florida. Martin gets invited to a camp with Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. And they looked at him and they were like, I don't think he can throw quite well enough to play SEC football at quarterback. And so they backed off. And he said, well, screw it. I'll just bet on myself and play college basketball. Worked out pretty well. But don't know if it works out so well that he can like take on a whole new position really at the University of Florida in the SEC. We will see. Because right now there's not much else on like Florida's point guard portal board, you know, while they wait on what Martin's going to do. And I do think they're waiting on what Martin's going to do.
Yeah. And it would be, again, going back to the previous conversation with Alexis, like if you get Martin and Alexis as your first two takes, then I do think that like that signals just such a massive philosophical change. And because, again, I would say that Elijah Martin is a defense, like he's a better defensive player than offensive player. So if you start bringing in all these defensive guys, that would be like a major philosophical change. And I do wonder if that would be something that Golden's more comfortable with and a way that could, that might be better overall. So I'd also, if they came out like Elray and said, if they took Elijah Martin and said, hey, we are like, We knew we didn't guard well enough. You know, my flaw, like I'm really a defensive guy, and I, you know, this is like, I think we got a little bit out of character for me last season. I want to get back to the kind of defensive stuff that has had success throughout my coaching career. Like I would be like, okay, that's awesome. Like, you know, keep going. You might as well lean into it. So that would be quite fascinating. And I think that what you're saying about Aberdeen is as well, just when it comes to like, again, another thing that's hard to get are our wings, players with size. So again, like Denzel Aberdeen at 6'5", like might have to be playing some small forward and taking on some bigger assignments. I mean, unless you have him out there with Elijah Martin and you play Elijah Martin on, you know, 6'6" SEC wings, which is something that could happen. It's like you said, some of the at least public names have fallen off. And then there is like the Aiden Mahaney, who's like, yeah, like I think Mahaney's incredible. I would love that. But it's just when you get contacted by every top 25 team, it's just like, it's not even saying the Florida can't be, I'm not even saying the Florida doesn't have a chance. It's just like, it's just hard to like filter through what's legitimate at this point. So, I will just put in my, you know, quick 2 cents of not a hot take at all, that I do think Aiden Mahaney is outstanding and I would love him. Yeah. I'd be interested. Like St. Mary's is one of the slowest teams in the country, so I'd be interested if playing a different style would be something that he prioritizes or what. But that could be maybe some of Florida's sell. He is outstanding. We're still like, I still feel like there's a lot of players that have not put their name in the portal that are trying to game it a little bit and enter a little bit later. So yeah, I still think we could see, you know, there's still see names come out and see what happens. But it does seem interesting that it feels like just overall across the country, portal decisions are coming. There are not coming as early as they have in recent years, which has been pretty interesting. So it's just maybe there's some people that are panicking a little bit that wish Florida had some more commits. But it's like, yeah, you look around the country, there's not a ton of commits elsewhere. So have some patience. And on Tyrese Radford, just going back to what you mentioned, I saw that he was at the Portsmouth Invitational with Tyree Samuel. So I do think that means he is probably out unless he's, you know, somehow does find some year of eligibility somehow and takes a Zion Pullen suspension. So I was also actually interested, and I don't know if I'm Zion Pullen's not at Portsmouth, obviously was last year, and that's why he missed Florida's first 3 games. I don't know if players can go back to Portsmouth a second time. Like, I don't know if that's like, like, I feel like that's, they probably can't, but I also, there is part of me that wonders like, did Zion Pullen play so well this season that he's might, you know, going to be more of like a G League combine guy and get some legitimate NBA looks. So I would be interested on that, but I'll probably have some update on Gator Country in a week or so when Portsmouth wraps up on how Tyree Samuel is doing. But just for a little update on the graduated Gators and where they might be headed. Tyree Samuel is at Portsmouth. That's usually, you know, maybe some G League caliber guys. Occasionally a guy that's at Portsmouth gets a late round NBA pick, but usually that's like, this is more like G League as well as like all the best European teams are at Portsmouth looking for players. So that kind of could be the situation there. And then Zion Pullen is not there. I'm assuming it's just because they don't allow players to go twice, though somewhat unprecedented, I guess, for Portsmouth. But there's part of me that wonders if Pullen actually does have a lot better looks from the NBA and didn't feel like this was something he needed to do. So time will tell on that. But that's just my quick departure when you mentioned Tyrese Radford.
I like it. I did not know that that's where good old Boots was, but I hope he's doing well. So that's kind of, I guess, like, I don't know, that's a pretty comprehensive portal summary of where Florida is. Close with happier news. Florida gets a top 50 commitment for the first time in the golden era. So, you know, progress being made. To those folks that said Todd Golden couldn't recruit high school players, at least one big strike against you for that take. I do think Florida needs to, like Connecticut, like the teams that are at the top of the sport right now, Alabama, you have to recruit well in the high school ranks. And so when you land a top 50 recruit, that's a big deal. And especially when you land one that that, you know, had serious interest from, you know, sort of newish, or I don't know if you consider Michigan State a blue blood, but certainly they recruited Alex Lloyd pretty hard. And, you know, Miami had been recruiting Alex since eighth grade. So Miami had been to the Final Four more recently than Florida. So I think Florida, you know, gets a big win here. They also, I think, get a really good player, a guy who can score in a lot of different ways, a guy who, look, Eric and I watched some video of Alex a couple years ago, and we were worried about his ball handling a little bit. We were worried about whether he could guard. And, you know, a couple years later, he's risen 100 spots in recruiting rankings and led Broward County in steals, which is a pretty competitive place. Had a chase down block at the Peach Jam that people have been talking about for a few months. Has great athleticism. I think he has good form as a shooter. He shot 40% this year, which isn't an electrifying number as a high school player, but isn't certainly anything that would raise any alarm bells at all. And played for a team that was nationally ranked in the top 50, and I think played a very competitive schedule. The real eye-opening game for me with Alex was the matchup that Westminster had against McEachern out of Atlanta. They had Ace Bailey, who I think was either one or two in this current recruiting class. And Lloyd had McEachern won by three. This was at City of Palms in Fort Myers, famous tournament where such distinguished players as Neil Blackman have played. Alex had 27 points, five rebounds, five steals, five steals and four assists against Ace Bailey. And so I think really impressive game there. So I like, you know, this, obviously I'm thrilled about the take. My own personal relationships at Westminster make me pretty happy about it, but really happy for Alex. And I think a guy who can help the Gators win for the next couple seasons. Once he arrives, he's still got a year of high school to play.
Yeah, it seems like so much more rare now for players to commit that early. So nice to have a player like that, like a guard with size. Like, I think it's just like the out of boxes he checks in terms of like, yeah, like he's got size. He can go get his own bucket. I really think the defense looks great. The upside there is big. And I really do think, like, I know a lot of people would love to land like the Boozer twins and like, hey, we'll see what happens. But like, I really do think the fact that he doesn't look like a one and done player, like, is like, these are the kind of players that Florida should be recruiting, I think, that are going to stay multiple years. And it's like, again, I know people get really excited about the five stars and like players that are in the top 25. But it's like, when you look at recruiting rankings from recent years, and you look at players from recent years, and you look at like where all these top 20, 25 players went, like there's not a lot of like success. Like again, you look at looking in 2022, where you look at like, oh, GG Jackson's at South Carolina, and like Dylan Mitchell's at Texas, and Kellel Ware's at Oregon, and yeah, you know, like it's just, there's a lot of like Cam Whitmore at Villanova, like there's, and again, I like, is that cherry picking a little bit? Like, yeah, like obviously like Nick Smith was a, you know, a pretty good player, but like, or like Derek Whitehead was pretty good. But you just look at like these players that go one and done, like Isaiah Collier last year, the number one player at USC. Like, I bet people listening to this didn't think of Isaiah Collier once this entire year. They probably didn't think of USC once this entire year outside of Bronny James coverage on SportsCenter. Like, right. Cody Williams, the seventh best player, like had some good minutes for Colorado, but like, he's probably just gone and they didn't really get that much production from him. Mackenzie Mbako, I'll give people a chance. Do they know where he played? I'm guessing not. I won't even tell you. You have to Google it. So like, again, you just look at these top 10 players and like a lot of them are going to be one and done based on upside. But it's just like, did they really even help their teams? Like in some cases, yes, but like, really in a lot of cases, no. So like getting a player that's, instead of being a top 25 player, that's going to be gone pretty much no matter what, getting like a 45th best player, And I guess, you know, we'll see. It's still a year away, so we'll see exactly where he lands. Could see him getting a little bit higher. But I don't think he's ever going to be like in one and done discussions, but hey, we'll see what happens. Yeah, just like if you're going to build a program, I think these are the guys that you should be looking for. So again, I know a lot of people want five stars. They want McDonald's All Americans. I don't know, like just go open recruiting rankings from the last couple of years. Look at the McDonald's All Americans. Look where these players went and you'll be like, oh, that guy's team missed the tournament and he didn't even play that well. Or like, oh, that team was okay. And this guy played 9 minutes a game and he's still going to the draft. Like it's just, that's just the game you play with some of these higher name, recruits. And, yeah, if you want to win basketball games, I think that getting Isaiah Brown, getting Alex Lloyd, have them stay around a couple of years, you're probably going to get more production.
Yeah, and I would note that, like, he was first team All-Peach Jam with Cooper Flagg, with Cam Boozer, his teammate, in AAU. Like, he led Knight Riders, his AAU team, in scoring on a team with the Boozer Twins. So he clearly can score. What's been interesting is, like, the race to – so, like, and when I went down to Peach Jam to kind of check things out this summer, it's one of the cool things I'd never been. And one of the things that, and I'm sure Eric's been more of these types of events than me, probably. I don't know that for sure, but it's interesting to hear like coaches try to compare games to like pros and stuff. And they'll be like, oh, you know, this guy, he reminds me of so-and-so. And like with Alex Lloyd, if you ask four people, you get a different answer from almost everybody. Like I heard Tyrese Halliburton, I heard Jamal Murray, which actually tracked a little more for me than Halliburton. I heard Kobe White, which didn't track for me at all because, like, I thought that was kind of lazy. It's like, oh, what, he's tall and skinny? Like, it's like, okay. You know, I don't think he's nearly as raw as White was when he got to North Carolina. And I say that knowing that like White's athleticism like helped him become Mr. Basketball in North Carolina, but like it wasn't like when White signed with UNC, they thought that he was going to be a guy who would go get 30 a night right away. Just kind of, you know. And it's funny that the Kobe White thing came up because if anybody watched the NBA playoffs last night, it was like, who is that guy? I haven't seen much of that in the NBA. From him, but he had like 42 points last night in a play-in game for Billy Donovan. But yeah, I mean, what I will say about his game is that he is very explosive off the bounce, sort of like Walter Clayton is explosive with his first step. The other thing I like about Alex right away is that even though he's 6'4", 170 pounds, right? And he needs to get stronger and he has a year to get stronger in high school. I like that he can finish through contact. And that's the thing you'll notice if you just do very simple Google searches looking for video. You'll notice that he has really good body control in the air and he can kind of, he's good at finishing that way through contact because he can control his body and he can make shots from a host of different angles, which really good scorers and finishers can do, right? We've seen Riley Kukoc try to do it when he shouldn't. Lloyd is much smarter about it. In terms of the domino effect of this, you know, I mean, because Eric mentioned it, I know a lot of people love the Boozer Twins. I think a more pronounced domino effect might be that his teammate at Westminster is Alex Constanza, who's a top 20 player in the 2027 class that Florida is in a recruiting battle with Alabama for. And like, I think that might be a more direct type of connection. And Constanza's interesting because he is like 6'8", you know, point forwardy, just a problem. But Lloyd is definitely the scorer. He had 40 points in two games last year for Westminster, one of them at the City of Palms. Like, he can definitely fill it up. It's the growth he's made defensively that has impressed me. And I think as Eric said, this is the kind of player that you can build a program. You know, you have your portal piece, but then you find high school players that not only are highly recruited, but that also fit what you want to do from an identity standpoint. And I do think Eric and I spent a lot of time talking about one of the big flaws with Mike White was it was always hard to figure out what to recruit in high school because Florida didn't know how they wanted to play. And I think because Florida's staff here seems to have an idea of how they want to play, you know, getting a guy like Lloyd who fits that mold, who can get out and transition, who can attack the basket off the bounce, that's a big deal. So good get for the Gators, you know, in addition to obviously being exciting for me personally.
So how many high school players do you think that Florida takes in 2025?
So, I mean, I get a lot of – like, I figure if they were going to take the Kaysom kid from FAU who visited, like, they may – you know, he might have committed already because you don't usually get like three stars whose best offer was in fact FAU, like that go on an official to Florida, like don't tend to not commit right away if it's possible for them to commit. So my sense on that was like, maybe they're not open to that spot going to him at this point in time. Even with, they have an extra spot now because Shimshek hit the portal since we last recorded. But I don't think they're going to take – like he would be the only other high school kid unless the Boozers are reclassifying. But it seems like a lot of the Boozers reclassifying chatter has kind of died down a little bit. Maybe it hasn't. Maybe I'm not privy to those. But when like I did as much of a deep dive message board dive as I ever want to do again yesterday, and like – there wasn't much talk about the Boozers reclassifying anymore. It seems to kind of have been put to bed that they'll probably be back at Columbus next year. And that's fine. I mean, all three of them could come. They're all AAU teammates. Constanza does not play for Knight Riders, but he does play with Lloyd at Westminster. So that's all pretty interesting to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Just after Alec or Isaiah Brown is, like kind of the one commit in 2024 and with Alex Lloyd being, you know, again, like a guard with size. And in 2025, I'm just kind of interested to see, like, is Alex Lloyd going to be like the one commit in 2025 or what? So that's obviously just shows the shifting nature of things. And but I think that's one of the things as well. Like you can always, like you're always going to have room for guards with size. So no matter what Florida's roster looks like from like, hey, do they get more portal guys with multiple years of eligibility? Like, it doesn't really matter. Like, I think you're always going to take Alex Lloyd and there's always going to be a fit for him. So, but yeah, it's certainly interesting to be looking like right now at like one commit in 2024. And yeah, we'll see. Like, does Florida end up like taking another international player late if they have spots or what?
Right.
But yeah, so that's the changing face of high school recruiting is not something I will lament personally. So as you were also talking about having to do message board dives on the Boozer twins, but so yeah, it's yeah. And again, it's like to get something like this wrapped up before that player's or, you know, well before that player's senior season has to feel great for him. And it's also nice for the Gators to be able to, you know, relax a little bit knowing that like, hey, if they're only going to take a couple at most high school players, like, well, then it's really big to get. If you're only going to take two, getting one out of the way is pretty massive. So, yeah, pretty good for the team and very exciting for Alex Lloyd and his family.
Yeah, I mean, huge stuff. And again, I mean, he's a guy who's moved up in every 24/7 ranking. So if you're using the 24/7 composite or even the On3 rankings, he's a guy who's moved up in every one of them. He just got a huge bump in ESPN from like 74th to 37th. So I'm not even sure like what goes into all that, but he continues to trend upwards. And I imagine that will happen again when Knight Riders get back to Peach Jam this summer. So yeah, worth monitoring, of course. Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully we'll be back. Certainly some form, shape or form of Florida Basketball Hour will be back when the portal continues for the Gators and there are more visits. I'll let Eric sign us off.
Go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.